With that, let me open us with a word of prayer. Dear Lord, we are beginning this study of Amos, and he's not always an easy prophet to understand. And there are all these oracles about the Gentile nations and about Israel and Judah, but it's so important to understand when looking at this book that it's all about God's timing. And we know when we pray, we ask for things, and it doesn't seem like God hears us or he doesn't answer our prayers in the time we want. And that is so much the way the book of Amos is. And we're going to see tonight that Amos prophesied against these nations. And then sometimes it was 400 or 500 years before the prophecies came true, all in God's timing. So Holy Spirit, illuminate our minds and our hearts as we begin this study on the book of Amos. Amen. All right, jump in. This lesson was a little longer, mainly because for those of you that didn't participate in the Elisha study or forgot about what we studied, I wanted you to have some background material. So when you're studying, let me back up. So remember, we're after the death of Solomon. So we've got two kingdoms now. We've got the northern kingdom, which is called Samaria. We've got the southern kingdom, which is called Judah. The northern kings were apostate. That means that they fell away from worshiping the Lord God and following all of his laws and decrees. And over and over and over again, when you read about the kings of the northern kingdom, they say they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they followed what Jeroboam did. Not the Jeroboam of Amos, but the first Jeroboam, who was the first king of the northern kingdom after the death of Solomon. So what sins did he commit? And who wants to summarize what you learned from 1 Kings 12, 25 through 33?
I will. He made two calves of gold. He placed one in Bethel and the other in Dan. And then he told the people, he said, "You've gone to Jerusalem much too long or much enough." So they started worshiping those calves.
Yes. Thank you, Cassie. What else?
Then he built temples in high places, and he appointed priests from among the people who were not Levites.
Yes. All right. So right out the gate, when I said they were apostate, that's exactly what we're talking about. So we no longer have Levitical priests at all. Hmm. Okay. After the first Jeroboam, a couple of kings later, we have Ahab. And this is the husband of the famous Jezebel. So what did Ahab do?
Well, he married Jezebel.
And why was that so bad, Lori?
Well, she was bad. And then he built the altars. She worshipped Baal, and he built the altars to him. And this is like the most frightening phrase to me. He did more to provoke the Lord than any other king before him.
Yes.
And I would sure hate to have that said about, I hope I don't have that said about me.
Not a great appellation. Yeah. And he also said he made an Asherah, and an Asherah was a pole, sometimes with multiple breasts, and she was the female consort of El, who was the Canaanite god. So that's what he did. Okay, now, Ahab was really bad, and so God commanded Elijah and Elisha to anoint someone to get rid of the house of Ahab. and to get rid of Jezebel. And that person who was to be anointed was Jehu. So what did God promise Jehu from 2 Kings 10?
He said, your sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel.
Right.
But Jehu didn't really do what he was supposed to do, right? But the Lord still put the fourth generation on the throne.
Yeah. He got rid of Ahab's family. And he got rid of Jezebel, but he didn't really scrub the country of idol worship.
Mm.
So the nation is still apostate under Jehu. And one thing to note here is the way you count generations. So he says to the fourth generation, Jehu would be the first generation. That doesn't make sense to us, but that's the way they counted things back then. So we're going to fast forward then to beginning the book of Amos. And what kings were ruling Judah and Israel when Amos begins his prophetic work?
Uzziah and Jeroboam.
Yes. And this is Jeroboam the second.
Second. Okay. That's
what okay. I'm gonna... And he is one of Jehu's descendants. So he's one of those generations of Jehu. So that's where we are. Good. All right. So the prophet Elisha had made a prophecy about Israel at this time. And long story, but in 2 Kings 13:17-19, he said something to the king. And what did he say?
The Aram or Syria would be defeated three times.
Yeah.
But not completely?
Yes, correct. That is correct.
So that, yeah. And Jeroboam's son would completely defeat them when he came into power.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right, moving to question six. All right, so Jonah, the prophet Jonah, also prophesied something about Israel. And what did he prophesy?
That the border of Israel from, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing these, Lebo Hathna, as far as the Sea of Arah, would be restored.
Yes. So it's Lebo Hamath and the Sea of Arabah. So was anybody able to find Lebo Hamath or Hamath on a map?
I could not.
No.
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 I've looked.
All right. It is way north in Syria. So when Jeroboam was ruling, he was able not to just go into what we consider traditional Syria, but go way beyond, deep, deep into Syrian territory. And how about the Sea of Arabah? Anybody find that? That's a really hard.
That's the Dead Sea.
It's the top of the Dead Sea, yes. So we'll look at that on the map when we get to the lecture. But that's the traditional southern edge of the nation of Israel, abutting right up against Judah. Okay. All right. So that tells us the extent of the nation under Jeroboam and how successful he was in extending the territory. And they had lost territory because there was constant fighting with the Syrians and with some of the other nations that we saw in the oracles of this week. So what nations were conquered? Well, the obvious one is Syria, which is also called Aram. And the other one, this might have been a little bit hard to figure out, but it's Ammon, A-M-N-O-N, which is on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And that's one of the nations that we had in our oracles tonight. So the nation of Israel had lost territory to both Ammon and Syria, and Jeroboam II was able to get that back. So here's one picture of Jeroboam, is that he was a very successful military king. Mm-hmm. And the territories, once Jeroboam conquered this, that made the territory of Israel pretty much what it was under King Solomon. Remembering, though, that Judah, you know, is carved off. But, I mean, he was that successful in getting the territory back. All right, so moving on to question 8. What did you learn about where Amos was from and what his profession was, or what were his professions?
He was a herdsman. That's me, Jane. And a dresser of sycamore trees. He was a shepherd, a livestock breeder, and he was probably looked on as a man that did not have much learning, much book learning, but he knew a lot about God and the Bible, not the Bible, about, you know, what was expected and laws and commandments. And so he had a rural background.
Good. Very good. Yeah, he probably could not write, and he may not have been able to read, but he certainly knew God's law. Mm-hmm. He would have likely studied God's law. Good. Where was Tekoa? Anybody find that?
About 5 miles south of Bethlehem.
About 5 miles south of Bethlehem. All right. So what kingdom is that?
Judah.
Yeah. So here's a prophet from Judah, and he's a prophet to Israel. So here's the guy who's a shepherd and a sycamore tree dresser. And he's from the south, and he's going up north. So how do you think that sat with the northerners?
No.
Not so great. All right. So what event happened in Amos's life? This is question 9.
Earthquake.
An earthquake, yes. And it's recorded in 2 prophetic books. Zechariah and Amos. I will show you a picture of earthquake damage from this period that's been uncovered. So we'll look at that tonight. Okay. So in Amos 1:2, God's personified as a roaring lion whose voice reaches one city and a mountain. So what does the city represent, and what does the mountain represent?
Israel, and Jerusalem represents Judah.
Correct. Yes. Mount Carmel is associated with Samaria because it is in Samaria, and this is where the prophet Elijah did his big miracle. So definitely associated with that. Okay. So the result of God's roar, question 11, is that the shepherds mourn and the top of Mount Carmel withers. And the top of Mount Carmel withering doesn't make a whole lot of sense because there's not much up there but rock. But the base of Mount Carmel is just this beautiful verdant plain where all these crops grow and there's plentiful water. So that's all going to wither and die. And the shepherds in Judah are going to be mourning greatly because of God's actions that are to follow. All right, now we start with the oracles against Israel's Gentile neighbors. And I use the term Gentile here particularly to apply to a couple of the nations that are related to Israel and Judah, related by blood, but by this point they are apostate also. So starting out, what did Ezekiel say about Israel's neighbors?
That they'll no longer have malicious neighbors who are painful briars and sharp thorns.
Mm-hmm. And how do their neighbors treat them?
I don't know. I didn't get that, apparently.
With contempt. Treated them with contempt.
Okay. I think at that point I got a little bit overwhelmed.
Okay.
And I think I just quit.
Okay. That's all right. That's okay. We're good. All right. So the first oracle is from Amos 1, 3 through 5. So what country is in the first oracle?
Syria?
Syria, yes, also called Aram. All right, and this oracle mentions Gilead. Where was Gilead?
I have no idea. No.
Okay, it is south of Syria, east of Israel. It's across the Jordan River in that territory called the Transjordan. And Gilead is a town, and it's also kind of a generic term that was used to talk about all the land of the three tribes that lived east of the Jordan River. And you've heard that hymn, and you probably heard the verse, "There is no balm in Gilead."
Yeah.
Kind of comes from this subject because given where Gilead was located, what do you think it was like? What do you think, why was it so vulnerable?
It would be next to Moab, wouldn't it be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's your capital way over here in Israel, and then east of the Jordan River, you are in Gilead. So you're ripe for the picking that any army from Syria that wants to come through, and Ammon that wants to come, and Moab and Edom that want to go up the King's Highway and take you out. So they were constantly invaded by a lot of different armies. So they suffered greatly, and they've been conquered multiple times. All right, moving on to question 14. So Amos describes Gilead being threshed like a field of grain. So, but he uses this really strong word picture. So what do you think that word picture implies?
Well, it talked about using some kind of thing that the ox would pull that had nails or something on it that would do something to the grain. I didn't understand it totally, but it sounded like something that if it was drug over something besides grain, it would be very
cruel and painful way to treat somebody.
Excellent. You've got it. You've got it. And I've got a picture of a traditional threshing sledge in the lecture, so I will show you that. But here we're talking about a threshing sledge with iron teeth. So that's going to be extremely destructive to the crop. You know, when we think of threshing, we usually think of one of those winnowing forks where you're tossing everything up in the air to separate the wheat from the chaff, or putting it in a basket and separating it that way. But they did use threshing sledges. So there's some early automation, if we want to use, you know, a contemporary word for that, that they were using. So that tells us about that. All right, so there are four punishments that are going to happen to Syria. This is question 15. So what are the four punishments?
Okay.
Break the gate bar of Damascus, whatever that means. Cut off inhabitants, which I would believe is an annihilation of the inhabitants and the king, and or two of them. Not sure what the other two are.
Fire and destruction of the fortresses. So you've got fire, you've got destruction of the fortresses, breaking down the city gates, and then exile. So what does fire signify in the Old Testament?
Judgment.
Judgment, yes. God's righteous anger. All right, good. And we're going to, we'll talk about in the lecture, historically, when the oracles came to pass. All right, the next oracle is in verses 6 through 8. So what nation is this, and what was its sin?
Was it the nation Philistia?
Correct.
But I don't know. I don't understand the wording, I guess.
Anybody else want to take a stab at it?
Well, didn't they carry the Israelites into slavery, the whole population into slavery?
Not the whole population, but they did capture Israelites and take them into slavery. And who did they sell them to?
Edom,
yes. Yes. It's really interesting when we get to the Oracle of Edom that Amos doesn't restate this. But this was a significant sin. All right. So what's going to happen? There are three things that are going to happen to the Philistines.
Okay.
Fire.
And cutting off the inhabitants that from the Ashkelon, the person who holds the scepter, him who holds the scepter from it. Okay. I will turn my hand against Ekron. Well, I'm just reading it out of here, and the remnant of the Philistines shall perish.
Right. Here. So again, you've got fire, you've got destruction of the fortresses, and all the Philistines will perish.
Fortresses.
So Ashkelon is one of the Philistine cities.
Oh, okay.
So part of this prophecy comes true in about 70 years after Amos wrote his oracle. So I gave you several references in here, one from 2 Chronicles and one from 2 Kings. So from 2 Chronicles, which king was responsible for fulfilling part of the prophecy? Who was it?
Uzziah.
Uzziah, yes. And what do we remember from the beginning of Amos? Uzziah was ruling Judah.
Yeah.
So this prophecy actually starts being fulfilled very soon. All right. And what did Uzziah do?
Did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. He defeated the Philistines.
Mm-hmm. He broke down the city walls in three cities, and he built Judean cities in Philistine territory. Okay. Next, you've got another king who, and we have him listed from 2 Kings 18, and this is a famous one. Who is this one?
Hezekiah.
Hezekiah, right. We know him from Hezekiah's tunnel, right? And what did he do?
He removed the high places, and he broke the pillars, and he cut down the Asherah.
Mm-hmm.
And he broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. And he trusted in the Lord.
Yep. And he broke down all of their strongholds. Says he struck down the Philistines as far as Gaza and its territory from watchtower to fortified city. So that was part of the destruction that was prophesied by Amos, the destruction of the fortresses. Okay, moving on to question 18, the next nation with the oracle mentioned in verses 9 through 10. So who is this?
Avi.
Tyre, right? Yeah. And did anybody look at a map and figure out what country Tyre was in?
It's in Phoenicia.
Yeah, it's in Phoenicia. Yes, correct. All right. So what did they do that was so awful? There were two things.
They didn't remember the covenant.
They didn't remember a covenant of brotherhood. Uh-huh. What else?
Is they delivered up a whole people to Edom.
Yes. So here is yet another nation that sold Israelites into slavery in Edom. Right. So what two punishments are going to fall on Phoenicia?
We'll send a fire.
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 And the fire will destroy the strongholds.
Yes, fire and destruction of the strongholds. And there's something different about the oracle against Phoenicia that we didn't see in the other oracles. Did you pick up on it?
They didn't annihilate the people?
Yes, correct. All the people are not annihilated. All right, now we've got three oracles, and we're going to look at two of them tonight about nations that were related to Israel by blood. So the first one is from Amos 1, 11 through 12. So which nation is this, and how were they related to Israel and Judah?
Mm-hmm.
was it Teman? I was kind of confused on this one. They're descendants of Esau.
Yes. Right. So the nation is Edom, E-D-O-M, and they are descended from Esau. And who was Esau?
One of the twins that was born to
Jacob. Jacob's twin.
Jacob's twin. Right. Good. Good. That's where
came out grabbing his foot.
Yes. Yes. Very good. And you know, from birth, the relationship between the two brothers and the two nations was always strained. Even when Jacob and Esau made peace, you know, things didn't go well. And there are just multiple examples of that. And I pulled one for you from Numbers 20, 14 through 21. So what happened in that example that caused bad blood between the Israelites and the Edomites?
The Israelites were leaving Egypt and they wanted to go through their territory and they were really ugly and wouldn't let them and came after them and they're like, we're not going to eat your food or drink your water or do anything. We just want to walk through, to get through, and they were ugly and wouldn't let them.
Yes, very good. So the beginning of bad relations there. All right. How would you characterize this nation of Edom's sin against Israel?
Revenge?
Just said they were ugly to their brothers. I didn't know anything else to...
Yes. And they showed no mercy. You know, when the Phoenicians and the Philistines showed up with slaves that they, or people from Israel they captured, the Edomites could have not taken them into slavery, but they did. So, you know, continued bad blood there. Okay, what two punishments are going to happen to Edom?
Fire.
Fire?
Mm-hmm. Destroy strongholds.
Destroy the strongholds. Are you starting to see a pattern here?
Yeah.
So I'm going to show you a picture of a stronghold destroyed by fire. And you'll be surprised when I show you that picture. All right, the last oracle for tonight is Amos 1, 13 through 15. What nation is this?
Ammon.
Ammon. And how were they related to Israel and Judah?
I don't know.
This is the Genesis passage.
It had to do with Lot.
Okay. So after Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed and Lot's wife became the pillar of salt, what happened next?
Ooh.
Lot's daughters did what?
Incest.
Yeah, they got dad drunk. They both slept with him. Right. They both got pregnant. Okay. So the youngest daughter gave birth to a son called Ben-Ammi. And it was from Ben-Ammi that we get the Ammonites. So that's the connection there. All right. So what did the Ammonites do? I've already mentioned it once, but... what did they do that was so bad?
They ripped open pregnant women.
Yeah. they invaded Gilead, and their invasion was so bad that they felt necessary to kill pregnant women, and obviously the newborns died too. And of course then, you know, they're invading, so they're going to kill the men too. So quite a devastating invasion or warfare. All right, so what three things are going to happen to Ammon?
Fire and devour her strongholds, and a whirlwind and an exile.
Yes. Yes. Good. Y'all did really good. So hopefully this will go easier next week. Actually, the lessons after this are a lot easier because they're a little shorter and you don't have to dig so much for background material. So any questions before I give you the lecture? All right, let me share screen. And I am going to, Melody, how's your bandwidth on your company? If I do PowerPoint and do slideshow, will it be okay, or do I manually advance the slides?
You can manually. I'm not at home today. I mean, I'm not at work today.
Okay.
I'm in Huntsville, actually, at my best friend's house.
Okay.
Getting ready to keep her kids while they go on a 20th anniversary trip.
Okay. So we're all on our home Wi-Fi then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I have pretty strong Wi-Fi where I am. So.
Okay. All right. If we're all on individual Wi-Fi, I'm not running through your company Wi-Fi, then this should work. If the PowerPoint freezes, y'all just holler and I'll manually advance the screens. Because sometimes PowerPoint doesn't play well with others. All right. Is everybody seeing that?
Yep.
Okay. Good. All right. Let me do this. And all right. All right. So Amos was from Tekoa, and you learned that that's 5 miles south of Bethlehem in the Judean wilderness. And he was a sheep and cattle herder, and Amos 7:14, the wording there means he's a cattle breeder, so he wasn't just your average shepherd. He was also a sycamore tree dresser, and sycamore trees in Israel are actually mulberry figs. And their fruit is much smaller than what we traditionally think of fig trees in the United States, and they don't taste as good. So it was the fruit of the poor. And a dresser took care of the fruit trees and may have also picked the fruit. And his name is a short form of Amaziah, meaning the Lord carries or the Lord upholds. And you'll notice there's no patronymic after his name. So it doesn't say Amos, the son of so-and-so. So this is very much an indication of his lower social standing. So here is a picture of Tekoa today. And it's actually in what's called the Judean wilderness. And you can see it's not terribly green. It's very hilly. It's very rocky. And this is actually in Palestinian territory today. But, you know, it's, can you imagine what it looked like in the time of Amos? So that it would have been a very, very small village where he was from. And then he worked out in these hillsides with his sheep. And here is a beautiful picture of a sycamore tree. Can you imagine being out in the Judean wilderness and having that wonderful tree for shade? And this actually is one that's growing in Israel. And I'm not sure how you get all the fruit out of the top of that tree. Maybe you hire some young boys to go up and pick the fruit because it's actually quite a tall tree. So we know that Amos prophesied during the reigns of Jeroboam II and King Uzziah. He tells us that. And this is considered to be the silver age of Israelite history. Israel reached its peak of material and economic prosperity, and its expansion, as we talked about, was comparable only to the reigns of King David and Solomon, which was the golden age. And it's likely that Amos's prophetic ministry ended about 745 BC, because there was a dramatic downturn in events after the death of Jeroboam II. And Amos also does not mention Assyria and the ruler Tiglath-Pileser III, king of Assyria, was the king that took Israel into exile shortly thereafter, or started that process. So in addition to providing the ruling kings of Israel and Judah, Amos also helps to date his letter by mentioning the earthquake. And there have been excavations at Tel Hatzor that show leaning walls, and the excavations date to about 760 BC. And Hatzor is in that area that's in the Transjordan, so east of the Jordan River. And that earthquake must have been very noteworthy and very violent enough to be noted by two of the prophets of the Old Testament. And here's that picture I promised you of the excavation of Tel Hatzor, and see this very leaning wall. And the archaeologists who did all this excavation believe that this is actually from that earthquake, that it made that wall tip over. That angle looks like it's anywhere from a 15 to 20% angle there. So when Jeroboam took the throne of Israel, his neighbor to the north had been subjugated by the Assyrians. So we're talking Syria. But after the Assyrians came in, the territory was controlled by a series of very weak and ineffectual Assyrian kings. So this enabled Jeroboam to regain that territory lost to the Syrians and extend his control deep into Syrian territory. He was, as we talked about, a strong military leader, and he was also able to regain that territory in the Transjordan lost to the Ammonites. While he was ruling for that 41 years, there were peaceful relations with Judah. There was thriving commerce and trade. And this created a small, wealthy upper class that had a luxurious lifestyle. There were ornate buildings with lavish furnishings, and there was an elaborate and lavish religious life at the Bethel and Dan shrines. So much like the prophet Micah, Amos was a champion for the poor and lower classes. And if we had to summarize all of the criticisms he had about the Israelites at this time, it was mostly focused on the upper class. He accused them of bribery, of extortion, of judicial corruption, of injustice, immorality, exploiting the impoverished and underprivileged, self-indulgence, and greed. Oops, sorry, didn't mean to do that. So here's our map, and let's just go over what we talked about tonight. So here's the Jordan River. So all this territory over here where my mouse is moving is called the Transjordan. Aram is Syria, here's Damascus, and way north of Dan, off the map, is Lebo Hamath, which was where Jeroboam II extended his territory. Here's Ammon off to the east, Moab to the direct east of the Dead Sea, and then Edom to the south of Moab. All of this green area east of the Jordan River is now part of the nation of Jordan. And if I said Ammon, you might recognize that. That's the capital of modern-day Jordan, and it sounds a lot like Ammon or Ammon. All right, here are the Phoenicians up here, north of Israel and on the coast. Here's Tyre that we read about tonight in Sidon, and Jezebel was from Sidon. So those are two of the major cities that were part of Phoenicia. South and west of south of Israel and west of Judah is Philistia, and you have the cities of Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Gaza. There were a total of 5 major cities in Philistia, and if you listen to the news today and you hear the term Gaza Strip, that is the ancient Philistine territory. Is now Palestinian, and it is the Gaza Strip. Here is Samaria. This is the capital of Israel. And here is Jerusalem. That is the capital of Judah. So that's our orientation. And the Sea of Arabah is the top of the Dead Sea, so just at the base of the Jordan River, and here is the Dead Sea. And just a couple of other comments about the map. You know, we had 2 nations that took Israelites into captivity and sold them to the Edomites. You know, for the Philistines, they might have been able to take them through the bottom of Judah, because this is this territory south of Beersheba is really a desert almost and very barren. So they could have taken their captives straight across to Edom. I'm not sure how the Phoenicians got their captives all the way to Edom. Couple of possibilities. One is move them through Syria and south through past Ammon, Moab to get them to Edom, or maybe put them on a boat, take them in the Mediterranean Sea, and come back up the other way through the Gulf. All right, so let's talk about the oracle against Syria. So Israel and Syria were often at war, and I call them friendly enemies. That's probably the best way to describe their relationship. They were often at war. And Amos mentions one event, which was the Syrian invasion of Gilead. And we talked about Gilead being a generic reference to those tribes of Gad, Reuben, and East Manasseh that were in the Transjordan or east of the Jordan River. And East Manasseh in particular was a convenient entry point for the Syrian raiding party. And Amos's word picture of Gilead being threshed with sledges of iron is particularly devastating. And that threshing would have been very destructive to crops. But it really is probably a metaphor for the fact that that war or those raiding parties were just extremely destructive to the people and the crops and everything that was in that territory. So starting with this oracle, we have fire, and fire is part of every one of these oracles. It represents God's anger, but it was a very destructive force. We don't think about cities that back then were made of stone burning to the ground, but they did. And I'm going to show you a picture of one. And we also read that, you know, the city gates are going to be broken. Well, when you break down the city gates, you let that army into the city. And remember, at this time, these city gates were double city walls, about 12 feet apart, usually with a wooden gate. So once you, you know, set fire to that gate or those gates and get into the city, then you own the city. So the destruction of Syria takes place in 734 BC, and the Assyrian king, Tiglath-Pileser II, deported all of the Syrians. And this is what, all of the Syrians to Assyria. And this is what the Assyrians did. They would take people that they conquered and they'd move them to another territory, and then they bring other foreigners in. So it was an easy way to control the nations that they conquered. Here is a picture of a threshing board or threshing sledge. This one's made out of wood. And often these were used on the threshing floor. An oxen pulled this, and it, as we talked about, it was some early automation to separate the wheat from the chaff. And this was actually one that was found in Spain. Here is a picture of Megiddo. This is a city in the Northern Kingdom, and all of this black stuff is what's left over. It's the char on the stones and the stone floor left over from the fire that destroyed Megiddo. And archaeologists who have been to Megiddo estimate the whole city, which is huge, it's a several mile large city, burned to the ground in 2 to 3 hours. Hence the destructive power of fire against these ancient cities. All right, the next order, oracle is against Philistia. That's the coastal neighbor down here, south of Israel and west of Judah. And the Philistines were Israel's greatest enemy until the Assyrians arrived on the scene. And this is another nation that relationships were never good between the Israelites and the Philistines. If you go back and read 1 Samuel 4, 5, and 6, you'll find a record of the Philistines capturing the ark and keeping it for a long time. Amos accused the Philistines of capturing Israelites and selling them to the Edomites for slavery. The Edomites had massive silver mines, and they needed a steady stream of slaves to work in the silver mines because it's hot, it's dirty, they use mercury to get the silver out of the silver mine, out of the depths of the mines, and people did not live very long. The Philistine kings became vassals of the Assyrians in 722 BC, and then when Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came in, he subsequently destroyed all of the Philistines. So there are no Philistines left today. So the next oracle is about Phoenicia up here on the coast. And Tyre and Sidon were the two major cities of Phoenicia. And that the Bible tells us of at least three treaties between Israel and Phoenicia under King David, King Solomon, and King Ahab. And remember, Ahab's wife, Jezebel, was the daughter of the king of Sidon. And so it's probably this latter treaty with Ahab that may be the treaty of brotherhood that Amos references when he says they broke the treaty of brotherhood. Phoenicia is also accused of selling captives to Edom. In the mid-4th century BC, the Persians came in and destroyed Sidon. So remember, we have Assyria, Then the Babylonians come in and take over the Assyrians, and then the Persians come in and take over the Babylonians. So that's where we are, as to who destroys Sidon. And then Alexander the Great ravages the other large city in Phoenicia, but not until 332 BC. So it is 400 years after the prophecy of Amos that this finally takes place. All right, our next oracle is about Edom. We talked about Edom down here. Edom had been subjugated by King Saul and David, but it rebelled under King Solomon. And they regained their independence under King Jehoram of Judah around the mid-9th century. But 60 years later, King Amaziah defeated them, and he actually incorporated the territory into Judah. Now, scholars don't know when the aggression mentioned by Amos occurred, but remember we said that the relationship between these two nations was never good. But when you think about their acceptance of Israelite captives as slaves, that was sin enough. So in 553 BC, Edom fell to the Babylonians. And then in 550, the Arabs conquered Edom. And by 400 BC, the Edomites were actually forced to move to southern Judah, and they started calling themselves the Idumean. And next, we have King Herod the Great, and he was an Idumean. All right, our last oracle is against Ammon. And we know that Ammon was settled by the descendants of Lot, by his youngest daughter, Ben-Ammi. And the Ammonites had also invaded Gilead, like the Syrians had. And Amos paints that gory picture of the Ammonite invasion. And the Ammonites became vassals of the Assyrians, and it could be during this period that their king was exiled. And when the Persians overthrew the Babylonians, the Ammonites had to swear allegiance to the Persians. And we know from literature that the Ammonites existed well into the 2nd century AD and then disappeared off the face of the earth after that. So that's your sort of, when did the prophecies actually happen? Any questions? And you thought Amos was going to be simple. All right, so next week we're going to do chapter 2. It's not as rough as chapter 1, so it's more focused. We're going to do one more nation related to Israel and Judah. Then we're going to look at an oracle against Judah, which Amos throws in. And then we're going to start seeing all of his criticisms about what Israel has done next week. So the homework is a little less next week, and the lecture will be a little shorter because there's a little less material there.
Thank you, Michelle. Is the whole book written in, is it Hebrew poetry? Is that what I read? I think that it's all written in Hebrew poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And is Phoenicia what now is Lebanon?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, we can look back at that map again. Let's see. So, yeah, this is Jordan down here. Syria is up here now. This is Lebanon. This is the Gaza Strip, so it's part of Israel. And south, down by where Edom is actually part of Arabia today. So a lot of this territory from the Sea of Galilee almost to where Zoar is modern-day Jordan today.